are intelligent, science-based, pragmatic, and practical. I'm Matt Burgles, along with my co-host and good friend, Jerry Fabianic. We are coming to you from K-Goat Radio, KYGT, 102.7 and 103.9 FM, from deep inside the Rocky Mountains in beautiful and historic Idaho Springs, Colorado. Today on The Middle Way, Nancy Pelosi and her increasingly restless so-called squad of four, AOC and company. Can she control them? Should she even try? What does this say about the Democrats and their potential to defeat Trump? Bob Mueller is still set to testify before the House committees, albeit a week later than planned. Knowing Mueller's by-the-book style, will anything new come out of his public testimony? Representative Justin Amash of Michigan, apparently the only elected Republican with the courage to call out Trump, quits the GOP. Will others follow? And, of course, we'll discuss the seemingly ever-expansive list of Democratic presidential candidates. Will the field winnow sooner or later? And finally, we have a very special guest with us today, perhaps the rarest of all political oddities, a white rural man, over 50, who is not only anti-Trump, but is also a registered Democrat. As you all know, according to Data for Progress polling and most all other polling through 2018 and beyond, rural voters support Trump 63% to 31%. White men over 50 support him 58% to 37%. According to all the statistics, our friend Sam, who's with us today, should be a part of Trump's vaunted base. Well, he's not, and we'll find out why and what it is like to be a political minority in a small community. So, Jerry, a lot to get to today. It's been 3 weeks, I think, since we last spoke because of some scheduling conflicts that we all had. But it's good to be back with you. How have you been?
Oh, great. Yeah, it has been a few weeks. But, you know, time flies when there's so much great stuff happening here. And by the way, Sam, welcome. You want to try that mic out there?
Thank you. Glad to be here.
All right.
So let's start out with our friend Sam. I've given you the statistics, Sam. You live in the southeastern part of Colorado, very rural area, a few small towns down there. You've spent most of your life in the agricultural industry. And again, as I read in our intro, you are one of the people who are Trump, or you should be, I guess. You fit the demographic of Trump's vaunted base. You're a white male, you're over 50, you work in agriculture, you live in a rural area. How has it come about that you're not one of them, I guess?
Well, my family's a registered Democrat. I've always been, you know, grew up being Democrats. I didn't know I was in a minority, actually. I suppose I'm a Democrat, same way as everybody else is a Republican.
Right. So most of us, we get our start in politics, at least. Jerry's explained his metamorphosis in politics a couple times on this show. You know, same thing with me. I grew up in a blue-collar union family, and Democrats were what we were. We were just given that as along with our baptism into a religion. How about, though, as you became an adult and you've stayed in the same area, you went off to college for a while, you came back, you stayed in the same area. This Democratic Party today certainly isn't the same one that you grew up with, but you've remained in the fold to a certain degree, I guess. And, you know, we talked a little bit before going on air. Your community, of course, is mostly what most people refer to as Trump country. How does that work?
It's tough. You know, the people that you've been friends with all your life are now all of a sudden almost enemies. You got to watch what you say. Everybody's a little more edgy. The triggering is easy. But it's kind of tapered off, I'd say, towards the back end of Trump's term.
So you mentioned that at the beginning, during the campaign and in the first part of his presidency, it was really tough. But I think you mentioned that some people have maybe seen the light or seen the reality and have backed away a little bit, but maybe their pride prohibits them from being more vocal about it.
Yeah, it's going to be something to look at, like look back at. I'm sure everybody's going to try to decipher what Trump's administration was, but you need to look at it like everybody was angry. Everybody was mad at something, and they thought Trump was not the run-of-the-mill politician, and he was going to shake things up. Well, I think they're kind of tired of shaking things up, and they want something done now.
So when you see them on Main Street or in the store or, you know, wherever you run into them, most everybody knows everyone in your community. Like you said earlier, you've grown up with them. Do you ever bring up the subject of politics in this era of Trump? Do they bring it up, maybe less so now? And if so, how does that conversation play out?
Oh, I'm pretty vocal, you know. you know, people get mad at you.
And what do you, I mean, give us an example of what some of the topics you talk about are and where it leads.
Well, a lot of the small town stuff is just picked up like on the jokes or the little nuances or, oh, he lied about this. And a lot of them say, if you don't back Trump, then you hate America, which is absurd to me.
And how do you respond?
I don't think it's their America to say. It's, you know, it's my America just as much as it is your America.
And what's their response to that?
I think they just figured they had the political clout, and they kind of ran with it. And I think it's tapered off some. Is my feeling.
All right, so with that context, let's move into the news of the week, I guess, as I mentioned earlier. And Sam is going to stay here with us for the next 50 minutes or so and kind of give, you know, his commentary from his neck of the woods, so to speak. So first thing, Nancy Pelosi, we have documented this several times. She is doing her best to keep her majority or her caucus in order. Of course, there's a lot of clamoring on the left for impeachment proceedings to begin. She has done a relatively good job, I think, of squelching that, whether you think it ought to happen or not. Her job has been to, you know, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Let's let this play out. Let's see what the evidence suggests, and when and if necessary, we will start impeachment proceedings. But of course, there has been still this clamoring on the left, and as I referred to earlier, and as Jerry refers to, the Squad of Four, AOC, whose name I just call AOC. She's the representative from Brooklyn. And three other people have become known as the Squad of Four, people who are not in the fold with Ms. Pelosi, I think due a lot to age and demographics and just, you know, they think it's time for a changing of the guard within the party. And so I asked on the onset, can she control them? Should she try? And what does this say about Democrats and their potential to defeat Trump? Jerry, you've been following the story closely. Jump in on that, please.
Well, I think what's happened is that the I'm good on the mic. This is, we're having Sam here and giving your perspective and where you live in, like Matt, you described it, Trump country. And I grew up in Western Pennsylvania, blue collar, union, okay? And when we look at the two parties themselves, this is really telling about a fundamental difference between the Republican Party and the Democratic Party. And it goes beyond philosophy. Yes, the Republican Party used to be the conservative party. It's now the populist party and the hardcore and everything, because traditional conservatives like George Will have now stepped away and said, oh no, this is not who we are. But the Democratic Party is still the big tent one, and the dominant electorate within the Democratic Party still remains that moderate, progressive, liberal voter that's out there. So whether it's from, you know, the ranch lands, the farmlands, or the big cities, nonetheless, the Democratic Party still encompasses that. And so what ends up happening when we have folks like Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, AOC for short, and her friends, in the one I've commented before, I love AOC's spirit and everything. She's, you know, she believes passionately in this. But the bottom line is, how do you legislate? So one of my philosophy is, you can run on philosophy. You can get out there and, you know, on political points. But boy, when it comes to governance, you have to work with the other side. And even within your own party itself. Because Democrats are not all going to agree on certain things. And so how do you bring these coalitions together? And that's what Nancy Pelosi is really focusing on. She's trying to hold it together. She's not trying to squash. She's just saying, you know, to me, it's kind of like grow up, okay? And you're now doing the Trump thing. When you resort to Twitterdom and everything like this to get your very angry point out there, you just become Trumpized is all it gets down to.
Yeah, and you just described, you know, why I asked you if we could entertain beginning this program. And the words were bringing both sides together, which, of course, hasn't happened in the era of Trump and for some period before that, of course, to be honest. And so I think that, you know, maybe this Gang of Four is interested in further polarization, at least at the present time. I tend to think that some of their ideas, for example, the Green New Deal, I think that they're going to come to pass someday, but the time isn't quite yet. And their restlessness and their youth is, you know, is driving them probably too soon.
I don't know that that they want to cause more divisiveness. I think they've come in. They're young. They've got beliefs. They've got hopes, and they're pushing it. And I think that's the way you're supposed to be if you come into that situation. It'd be a hard line for Pelosi to walk to try to incorporate that vigor and honesty and still keep a little control in the party. The one thing that the Democrats, I think, are doing better is trying to envelop the younger generation, where it looks to me like the Republicans are trying to keep that sort of thing out of their party.
I think the changing demographics in the country are definitely on the side of the Democrats right now, and that is the color is changing from white to brown. The number of, you know, to cut to the chase, the number of rich old white guys is dwindling, and the number of people who traditionally vote Democratic is increasing. And I read an article somewhere, I can't cite the author right now, just in the last few days, and it said, you know, the future is looking brighter for Democrats all the time and not so much for Republicans because of their conservatism, which at its base means we're not going to change, or we're even going to go back to the good old days. Refuse to embrace some of those changes, and you can go right down the list. The environment, many of them still refuse to believe that the climate is changing. Gay marriage, abortion, women's rights, you can just go right down the list.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with you on that, Matt. And, you know, when you look at the polls right now on the Democratic side for president, and you see that still in the front is Joe Biden. And Joe Biden still represents that traditional Democratic grouping, if you will. So when we go back, if you know, the Democrats back in the 60s, 70s, and even into the 80s strongly had the support not only of the urban labor vote, et cetera, but also in the rural areas. And since 1988, and you look at statistics of the percentage of votes that the Democrats have got on the national ticket, and even statewide for Senate, it's been a steady decline from 1988 over the last 30 years. Now, what's happening with that? Are the Democrats still representing and giving voice to the rural voters? You know, they're on the ranches, on the farmlands, etc. And I can't remember the gentleman's name who wrote that book. Remember What's Wrong with Kansas?
Yeah.
You know, and how it used to be strongly Democrat and now just, you know, blazing red. But although they did elect a Democratic governor, so real interesting.
I'm wondering how the age progression changes. It used to be you didn't know a young Republican or an old Democrat. So as you got older, you kind of
became more conservative.
Became more conservative. So in rural areas, if kids don't come back, that's why we're losing numbers all the time. So our demographic is getting a smaller demographic, and it's becoming.
When you mentioned, you know, the old FDR coalition that pretty much held until 1988 thereabouts, when you look at election maps of counties in the red and blue, I mean, your first glance, if you don't know anything about, you know, population trends and distribution and so on, and the Electoral College, it's just overwhelming. Because, of course, the map, the entire middle of the country, north, south, east, west, central country, the place where
Sam states
lives, yeah, the flyover country or states, it's just overwhelmingly red. And you see the blue, of course, on the coasts and little dots here and there. And, of course, Colorado is now becoming more and more blue all the time. But, and it's just overwhelming. Well, let's get to really, I think, what's important here, as it has become the trend in the last several presidential elections, and that is, where do the independent or unaffiliated voters go? Right now, with the last election, when the Democrats did retake the House of Representatives, of course, most of them went to the Democrats. Whether or not that was a change in their feeling toward Democrats or simply exercising a check on Trump remains to be seen. I would suggest that it was just a check on Trump and what they viewed as extremism. But let's move to 2020. Where are they going to go with this impeachment thing, with the squad, you know, the gang of four, squad of four, whatever, the attempt to move the party to the left, Camp Pelosi hold, and so on? How's this going to play out? Well, get your magic wand out or your crystal ball.
I really, at this point here, unless something happens with Joe Biden and he implodes in a political sense,
which is very possible.
It's a possibility. But right now, when Senator Harris went after him in that first debate over busing, and he took a hit on that there, according to the polls. However, he's still well into the lead there. And it's starting to come back and bite her a little bit there, because now we're starting to really understand. There's a wonderful piece on the Washington Post site about Joe Biden's early days when he was just a young man, late teens, early 20s. And he was a lifeguard at an African-American pool there somewhere in Delaware, Maryland, wherever. And he was one of the few that did. Well, not only did he do it, but he had to gain the respect of these young people there. They're, you know, earn his chops, if you will. And he did. And these guys are, you know, his friends to this day. So this has given people an opportunity to really look at Joe's bio and look at that issue of busing itself. Busing was never a popular issue. And yes, there are some kids that definitely benefited from it. And Kamala Harris was one. But as someone pointed out, oftentimes it was a 50-50, because for every kid you bust into one school, you bust out of the other. And people just, they still believe in neighborhood schools. That may not make them racist or, you know, believe in segregation or anything like that. It's just, no, I want my kid in here. And so the busing issue, not only is it sort of in the past now, but it's not relevant, it's not germane per se to the issues confronting us right now as a country here.
I think, well, a couple things on that. Number one, if any three of us at this table, or anyone listening to us for that matter, were to run for office and everybody could have access to everything they've said or done in their lives, I mean, we'd all be sunk, right? Because we've all said...
Except for Trump.
Anybody with a conscience, let me put it that way, we'd all be sunk, because we've all said and done stupid things that we wish we could take back. And hopefully, as you grow and mature, you look back on those and say, man, that was stupid, and I'm better than that. Now, so I'm not making excuses for Joe Biden, but we know we live in a gotcha time of politics. And, you know, so back in the, when did he start in Congress? The 50s or the early 60s?
Late 60s.
We know that, you know, I used to teach history. I understand that the trends in the country change. I think Joe Biden, in his heart, as you said, with the swimming pool example, he's always been who he is. He was simply trying to make the case that, you know, back when I first started a long time ago, we used to reach across the aisle and work. And he said something to the effect, even the blue dog Democrats, the boll weevils, whatever, I used to reach across the aisle to get things done. Well, right away, that becomes, she said very clearly, I'm not calling you a racist, but you associated with them. And, you know, I get what she's doing. That's probably good politics. And her advisor sat around before the debate and did that. But, you know, Joe Biden is still the old-fashioned, aw, shucks kind of guy. And I think that in his heart, certainly, you know, he was talking about working together. He wasn't talking about, I supported the segregation policies that they did.
Yeah, no, and, you know, when she made that comment to me, it's something like, oh, some of my best friends are black, African-American. Okay, so that is, there's still an underlying dig in there. So I'm not calling you a racist. However, your policies seem to indicate something other. But what was amazing, and I'll go back to the AOC and the squad of four in the House with the... but when AOC responded to Speaker Pelosi, and she made a reference to how she's coming at the representative of color, women of color here,
And right away, she started getting blowback, you know, from the other African-Americans in the House who have now said, how dare you say this about Nancy Pelosi? Well, the same thing's happened with Joe Biden. His friends, not only in Delaware and so on, but in the Congress itself, have been around him and said, you know, you were out of line on that there. It, in a way, this kind of is backfired, I believe, on Kamala Harris. It's the ship of state, if you will, for the Democrats has righted itself again. Joe is still in the lead. And, and if you're going to take shots at anyone, if you know there's stuff coming, you want it to happen early in your campaign because it becomes old news. So someone brings this up in the next debate. He says, look, we've already talked about that. And it's gone. There's no longer an issue.
That's another good point about a new election. I don't know that society has dealt with the media being this fast or you know, the conflicts that we have with the media these days. There's people putting out the information that this is a Russian bot. You can tell, you know, this is... Mm-hmm. So...
You know, Joe's an old-fashioned Paul, and it's just like with the touching controversy. Oh, he squeezed me too hard, and he rubbed my neck. And, you know, I really believe there's no bad intent with Joe Biden in what he has said or what he does when he hugs people, but he just is slow to come around that you just don't do some of those things
that's
anymore.
That's the old school. But
that didn't kill him. That didn't hurt him.
No. But what reminded me is when you were talking about the social media. Of course, Joe Biden didn't grow up with computers. He didn't grow up with texting. And,
Neither did I.
Twitter. No,
any
of us here. But, you know. Anyway, so... one other point about that, and then we're going to move on to Bob Mueller and his testimony coming up on the 24th now instead of the 17th. And that is, what is that? I just lost my train of thought for a second.
No, but I have one related to that. And then we'll come back to it if it's not the same one. It was interesting. I was visiting with a couple friends locally, and we got talking about the presidential race. And I said, so what happens if Joe Biden does implode or he has a health issue? In other words, he's not available a year from now. Who steps in? Because right behind him in the polls is Bernie Sanders, and then followed closely by Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren.
And then Pete.
And then Pete is down there. So, and then when you look at who qualifies for the September debate, pretty much that might be it, and one or two others. But there's someone waiting, or not waiting in the wings, but I believe is down in that very lower tier right now, who, if Biden steps aside, can step in to it. And George Will wrote about him. It's in the Washington Post. It might be in the Denver Post tomorrow. We'll see. And he's our local guy here. And it's not John Hickenlooper, but Michael Bennett. And I'm wondering if Michael Bennett might be the pinch hitter for Joe Biden, and all of a sudden he goes from down low in the polls to all of a sudden he shoots up there. So can he appeal to the same demographic? And that might be a good question over here for Sam. You know, like if Michael Bennett were there, not only your vote or support, but how that might play not only with the Democrats in rural America, but also your Republican friends out there. Is he someone that could appeal across party lines? I don't know.
Well, you're certainly going to have somebody that appeals to the middle grounders on the right. You know, they're looking for somebody, I'm thinking. Some of them are.
And Michael Bennett has rolled the dice a little bit in this era of polarization because he has, you know, maintained throughout his career in the Senate, and now in this short campaign so far, he has maintained his centrism and his, I guess, for lack of a better term right now, common sense approach, trying to span that great divide in the middle. So I think you might be right. I remembered what I was going to say right now. Back to the debate, Eric Swalwell, the congressman from California who has since dropped out of the race, he also, of course, attacked Biden because of his age. And, you know, that's what you do, especially when there's 24 people, I guess. You try to jump on everybody's back and ring the bell ahead of them when you attack the front runner. And so that's what most of them did. Didn't work so well for Swalwell. And as you said, slowly Kamala Harris, maybe it may be coming back to bite her. Let's move on to Bob Mueller. Yep. As I said at the top, he is going to testify again, finally. He said very clearly after he released the 400-and-some-page report, volumes 1 and 2, that in his mind, he was done. He did his job. Here it is. And I don't want to talk about this anymore. Democrats, and you know, who knows if they're overplaying their hand, they have... he is testifying of his own volition, right? They did not subpoena him. So he's decided to skip the subpoena process. He is going to go and testify. I hold him at his word. He is the most straight-up, straight-laced, truth-telling public official I think that I've ever witnessed. And I'm going to hold him at his word that I wrote what I wanted to say, and I'll go ahead and sit here for 8 hours if you want, and I'm just going to tell you what I wrote again. But if you want to go through this, let's do it. Your thoughts on that?
He's going to answer the questions publicly. There's a lot of unanswered questions in there. I don't think he's going to do what Trump's little mouthpieces did when they went before the committee, a couple of them, and they, well, I can't answer that question, or they just kind of repeat, oh, that's off, you know, whatever, like that. I think he's going to be as straightforward as he possibly can. And if you remember back in the day in Watergate, when Richard Nixon ordered the Attorney General to fire Archibald Cox. Do you remember who the Attorney General was at that time?
Elliot Richardson.
Elliot Richardson. And that's who Bob Mueller reminds me of. He's that very straight up Republican type, kind of like the waspish, puritanical, whatnot. I shouldn't say puritanical. It implies some other stuff there. But the more noble...
By the rules.
I was blessed to have this great life. My now civic duty is to participate in it in a noble way. At any rate, Mueller to me is like the Elliot Richardson there. He has class, and he's not going to lie. He's not going to be evasive. Whether he can answer all the questions or not, it's to be seen. But it's going to be riveting TV, so it's going to be actually a week later, on the 24th of July.
I kind of wondered if Trump didn't bring up the deal about China not buying enough ag products. He's thrown that out there, and they said, we didn't promise to buy ag products. This is just, I wonder if this is a cover for Mueller. He tends to, every time something comes up, he's going to create.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's good at that.
Yeah, and also when he's just gone after Mueller again because of some, he deleted something illegally. He now, every time someone stands up to Trump, he attacks him. He goes after them. We know that there, and that might be what part of why people in your neck of the woods, and I like the way I said that, right? Yeah, that's what you say there, in rural America, neck of the woods, are starting to go like, okay, every person on earth who opposes Trump is the most evil person on earth. And all you have to do is say something negative about it, he's going to attack you. He's a dummy, he's a ninny. We saw that with the British ambassador. Now we're seeing it with Bob Mueller. We've seen it all the way down the line. So unless you're a bootlicker for Trump, you're going to get attacked. And I think that's starting to wear thin.
I think even if you are a bootlicker for Trump and you get caught at something, then he didn't know you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, kind of like the guy in Florida.
Yeah.
Okay, great conversation so far. It's time for our station break. You are listening to The Middle Way on KYGT Radio, live in Idaho Springs. We want to thank the Guanella Pass Brewery for sponsoring this first half of our show, and they will sponsor the second half as well. Delicious local eats, a dog-friendly restaurant, and homemade brews are on draft. 501 Rose Street in Georgetown. The Guanella Pass Brewery. Check them out online at guanellapass.com. Also, the Historical Society of Idaho Springs, celebrating the history of the Idaho Springs area through operation of three museums and the Idaho Springs Visitor Center at 2060 Minor Street. And their website is historicidahosprings.com. Don't go away. We'll be back in just a few minutes. Again, this is the Middle Way Centrist Talk Radio. And we are back. This is The Middle Way from KGOAT Radio, live in Idaho Springs, Colorado, Centrist Talk Radio. Well, as promised at the top of the show, we are going to talk about Representative Justin Amash from Michigan. If that name sounds familiar to you, it's because he's been in the news a lot lately. He is one of the few, if not the only, Republicans in Congress to publicly call for the impeachment proceedings against President Trump to begin. Not only that, after a few weeks of taking fire from, of course, his fellow Republicans, he dropped out of the Republican Party a few days ago and is now simply an independent. He has spoken his mind. He has stayed true, in at least as he says, to his conservative values. And now there's even talk of him challenging the president if, you know, at first in a Republican primary, but since he's not a Republican anymore, maybe moving forward as in an independent bid for the presidency. Well, as I said, he's been in the news a lot lately, and just a few days ago he was on NPR with an interview, and we'd like to play for you part of that right now.
All right, yep.
Jerry, introduce, please.
You got it. And yeah, it was on NPR. It was actually yesterday. And the headline on it is, Representative Mosh hasn't ruled out running for president as a third-party candidate. So let's take a listen.
Okay. Guys, you want to jump in? Any thoughts come to mind on that interview?
Yeah, a whole bunch of them, actually. He's right when they're talking about him being an independent in the House. It's very different than being an independent in the Senate. Because in the House, you're only one of 438 votes, actually, in the House there. And so would he feel comfortable lining up with the Democrats, for example? And that might be a real tight thing for Amash, because of his philosophy and so forth. That's very different than, let's say, Bernie Sanders, who is a socialist, or the other I think is King or somebody from Maine, who is the other independent in the Senate,
Angus King,
and how they caucus with the Democrats there. So all that to say is that if he wants political survivorhood and to keep his fame and everything, running at the head of the Libertarian ticket, and I think he would get it, because these people are philosophical. They're not truly, truly political, and willing to go. You know, they believe in it. I think he could cause some real havoc for Donald Trump.
Is he the offset of the Tea Party in the Republicans?
He got in with the Tea Party, but he's not one who he's the only one who hasn't compromised his values, is what it gets down to.
He's a Tea Partier with an intellect, let's put it that way.
Well, they may all have intellects, but they're also willing to compromise. So all this stuff here, we're running on principle. Principle all of a sudden is gone out the window, right, for Trump, and they're no longer libertarians.
So isn't this the whole issue here? Is he compromised his value maybe as doing his job to stand up for his beliefs?
Yes,
and that's kind of the whole issue in
yeah,
politics.
It's not only the policies themselves, but the outrage he feels, and maybe I'm putting words in his mouth, interpreting his mental state there, emotional state, I should say, regarding Trump. But, for him to be very strong, as strong as any of the other Democrats, 80-some of them in the House, who said, we need to bring impeachment charges because of his violation of law, Donald Trump's, and his disrespect for it, and he's very adamant about that in there. So that's tells you a lot about.
Well, he's certainly not trying to get the Democrats to go after impeachment as to trip him up. I think he's sincere. He thinks he should be impeached.
The amazing thing about him is, in this day and age, the courage that he shows. I think he could be added to Volume 2 of JFK's Profiles in Courage. To me. The thought of bucking this Republican/Trump party with something as serious as siding with Democrats on the need for impeachment, certain Democrats with the need for impeachment, I mean, that's just mind-boggling. Just walking into that building every day with those people like Mark Meadows, who we heard from, who was the flamethrower on the right, head of the Freedom Caucus. I mean, that's some serious pressure you're facing, not just within that building, but of course on social media and in the national media.
But also Pelosi's facing the same kind
sure.
of pressure from the other side to impeach. And I think she's playing it right. I mean, Mitch McConnell isn't going to even bring it to a vote. So she's going to have to build up enough
evidence that it's going to put McConnell in a place to where he's going to have to...
Well, he wouldn't have a choice on if the House votes articles of impeachment. He has to have the Senate hear that.
He has to do it.
If the House sends it there. Now, there's a technicality, and it was Lawrence Tribe of who wrote about this, that the House could still vote articles of impeachment, but not forward them, because they'll say, what's the point? And one of the arguments that Pelosi makes is that, let's say they find articles of impeachment. That's basically, the House acts like a grand jury in that case. They send it to the Senate. Okay, they find him not guilty, because no Republican's going to vote in the Senate to convict Donald Trump. Okay. All right. So does that start then after he's out of office? Let's say he's out of office on January 21st in 2021. Does that play into any legal proceedings? Now, technically, no. However, if, in a way, a jury of your peers has already found you not guilty of yada, yada. In other words, she doesn't want to muddy the water. That's one of her arguments. Now, whether that's a strong one or not, that's up to people to hear.
That's a good point. If he's going to scream that the Senate already found him innocent, just like Barr screamed that Mueller's report found him innocent.
Right.
Exactly the same.
Yeah. Yeah, I will state again that impeachment proceedings at this point is bad politics for the Democrats. If it gets to the point where it's just, you know, more evidence comes to the light and you have to do it, then you have to do it because of what the Constitution says. But at this point, I think Speaker Pelosi is right, and I think that most of her caucus has come to see that. I think right now this would be a gift and wrapped in gold for Donald Trump if they were to start that.
I'm going to go back to Amash in particular there, because as listening to this and our conversation here, and it tells you something about the Republican Party, how much it's moved. Can you think back the last one time over the last 30 years, a Republican, used to be a Republican, ran as an independent and actually drew a lot of support from the Republican Party? You remember who it was?
John Anderson?
Nope. Perot.
Who just passed away a few days ago.
Yeah, absolutely. And he, you wouldn't see that happening in the Republican Party today. So, anyway. Okay. All right. I'll take that phone if you want to.
All right. Going. So let's move on. There's two more topics I want to get to, and that is this ever-growing, as I said at the beginning, this ever-growing contingent of Democrats who think that they are presidential material, and how many, if any, are going to drop out, and if so, when. It seems to me, as Jerry has already alluded to, we've already lost one in Eric Swalwell. John Hickenlooper may be next, and there's three or four others whose names I don't even recall who might be dropping out. Sam, any opinion?
Okay, I will make that point.
I think we'll shed quite a few of them in the next couple of weeks. Just be down to like four or five, I suppose.
So you have to question the motivation of some of these people, if they really think they can be president, if they think they can win, if they think they're up to the job, or are they just angling for notoriety and or a cabinet position down the road, or to run for another office down the road once they get the press as a presidential candidate.
Okay, you'll need to loop me back into the point, but there was a caller just called in and had a point, and hers is that she goes back to Watergate. And when the initial hearings began, and I think it was 73, the public support for impeachment against Nixon was very low,
sure,
just as it is now.
Right.
However, it was through the hearings when evidence started coming out that all of a sudden, not all of a sudden, but gradually, the public opinion shifted. And so her point is then that by holding hearings, even if the Senate is not going to convict, it still would build a stronger case and shift public opinion, which could have benefits in a political sense too. But
so when you start the articles, you'd start the articles first. Don't start impeachment, but start the articles.
You have to have hearings, yes, as to, you can't vote on them and find the evidence. Now, the committees right now, with Bob Mueller coming in and the others, not only judiciary, but the tax, let's say more information comes out of the Southern District of New York, okay, regarding his stuff there too, and oversight, ways and means, and enough information comes in, that might be enough to start triggering some stuff there. But I think the caller's point is, though, that it wouldn't be a futile effort to start
but
down
I
that
think
path.
Back to the point of Watergate and the public opinion, you know, you need to reach a so-called tipping point. I don't normally use that phrase, but I think it fits here in that you have to have what I call a rats off the ship moment when the Republicans in the Senate finally say, okay, the longer we stick with this guy, we're all going down with the ship. You know, they walked into Nixon's office in about this time of year, 1974, and said, Mr. President, you know, you got to give this up because, it's out there and it's over. And that's when he resigned. We're a long way from that right now. Could change any minute or could change in months, but we're not there.
So do we start looking at the differences between Trump and Nixon? Because Nixon could understand and say, I'm going to bring us all down, and he resigned. But I don't think Trump's going to.
Sure.
And I think
the
same thing, Sam,
is
that would it have any effect on him? You know, he's going to go down with the ship, you know, or take the ship down with him. That's an argument there. But also the difference, there's two fundamental differences between 74 and now. One, the Democrats controlled the Senate in 74.
Right.
And the Republican Party was very different than now. It was not filled with all these right-wing ideologues and poodles Cory Gardner. So that's another factor comes into play, too.
All right. So thank you to the caller. And by the way, Jerry, I keep wanting to get back to the call-in segment of our show. We have some technical things we got to overcome here since we've moved the studio and so on. But we appreciate that call, and hopefully we can get to a better automated system where we can entertain more of those. So what we shifted to, and real quick, let's hit it, because I do want to get to our conversation about the attempted recall of Governor Polis, and especially I want to hear Sam's take on that from his neck of the woods down in rural southeastern Colorado. But we began to talk about, you know, there's, I think, 24 candidates now. One has already left. You mentioned earlier Hickenlooper might be the next. There's four or five others probably to go. You know, Sam said he thought that more and more would be dropping here in the next few weeks. Your thoughts?
Oh, I totally agree with you because really donors are like voters. And
right.
And the not only the number of donors, because they actually total that, you know, 65,000 is the magical number now. And then which will still be the base standard to get into the July debate. But once you move into August, September, that doubles. And but also it's the number of dollars that come in. And because to run a campaign, you have to hire staff. I mean, this is a very expensive endeavor. And just in economics, a lot of them are just going to fold up the tent and say it's just not worth it. And then the donors are going to say, why am I, you know, supporting a dead horse here, sort of.
They're going to buy the hot stock. They're going to put their money on the hot stock.
Right. So who's their second choice go down? And, you know, whether it's, you know, because they do a lot of the polls where they'll say, okay, who's your first choice? And they might say Biden. Well, okay. So the Biden voters, who do you support as for the second place?
Well, yeah, not to hijack this or anything else, but they've talked about a different system where you can just vote one, two, or three.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that's not the way. Let's say Biden would fold for some, you know, my hypothetical, where would his support go? Right now, it says, you know, because they give him the choice, would it be Harris, Warren, or Sanders? Or Mayor Pete Buttigieg, okay? But would that really happen? Would they all of a sudden jump over to, for example, Michael Bennett? You know, I mean, it's a wild card. We don't know yet.
Well, we don't even know if the money will stay on the Democrat side.
Well, what do you mean by that?
Well, I think there's some people that would put their money where they think it'll do the most good. If we don't have a Democrat that steps up good, are we still going to hold everybody?
Are you talking in the final election next year?
Yeah,
right.
There's a group of devoted Democratic contributors who
donors,
they're going to always be Democrats.
So,
all right, well, let's shift gears, come back a little bit closer to home. As allowed under the Colorado Constitution, elected officials can be removed from office if you gather a certain number of petition signatures based on a formula for the number of votes cast in the last election for Secretary of State, and then the recall election can be held. Now, this, of course, is a rare occurrence. Republicans tried it a few years ago with some certain state lawmakers in the House of Representatives, Democrats who tried to get gun control legislation. Before it really got off to a start, though, they resigned, as I recall, and Republicans were able to eventually fill...
One was recalled. I think it was Morse down in Colorado Springs or something like that.
So it's a rare occurrence, nonetheless. In this case, however, you know, barring something egregious, normally nobody tries to do this. They simply wait for the next election and try to win fair and square. And this is a case where Governor Polis is facing this recall simply because he is attempting to do the things that he campaigned on, full day kindergarten, of on and on, a very progressive agenda. And so, you know, Jerry and I have documented many times on this program the turning of this state blue, not only blue, but real blue, it seems, and just the election of this individual, a gay man from Boulder, who comes in with no bones about his progressive ideas and what he wants to get accomplished and wins election by a substantial majority.
10 points.
Yeah.
That's a landslide.
He's moving into getting those accomplished along with majorities in both the Colorado State House and State Senate. And so, you know, I'm not sure how that's going to play statewide simply because you are who you are or you represent this progressive agenda. We're going to recall you. You guys' thoughts on that?
I'm sorely lacking on kind of the state politics. You know, everybody's focused on national politics, and it takes up everything, takes up all the time that you're kind of getting cheated out of.
In southeastern Colorado, in your community, do you recall conversations or, you know, chatter about Polis and his chances of getting elected and what happened since, or is it all national?
I think it's all national. You see a few things like on Facebook or Twitter or something like that, but it's a very, very small percentage of people who care about that, because we can't get home to watch the next program on what's broken today.
Yeah, and I for one never want to play a Republican in a game like racquetball, because they want to change the rules. So if the game's over and I won, they want to replay the game, is what it gets down to. And I think what's happening, or will happen, and I take the lead because there was another one who was under fire there, and that was Tom Sullivan. And they dropped the recall on Sullivan, and he's the one who lives in Centennial, and he was behind the red flag law and a few others that came up. And they dropped that push there. And yet now they turn around and start targeting these others here. And people are going like, okay, here are the rules, because recalls should really be for egregious actions that are, you know, beyond the bounds of propriety in terms of behavior. So let's say Epstein, who's under fire right now at the national level, were a legislator or the governor of Colorado, absolutely, if he refused to resign, then that's what the recalls are all about. Not this, well, I didn't like the way you voted on these issues.
Well, of course,
here.
But how does this play with the public?
I think the public is going to get really tired of it, because they saw it happen once, and what ends up happening, the reason that the one got recalled, the other one resigned, is that who's going to go to the polls on an off election? Because they don't necessarily have it at a November election. And it's going to be the diehards who just absolutely passionate, because a lot of people, they just tune out, because the elections happen, as far as they're concerned, other than the school board, every other year in November. In the meantime, I tune out. So your comment, Sam, about your focus is primarily on the national, and the state is like, and so when you're hearing about this, you go like, what? You know? But I think it's just coming up, and Polis, he won so big a year ago. I think is not only is it foolhardy on particularly on the Republicans that are supporting us, and if the party gets behind it, it's really going to blow up in their faces, because people are seeing that, one, you're already trying to jimmy the books there by, you know, depressing the registration, voter registration and everything, too. That's Trump's whole thing about the census and so forth. So you're already trying to fix the rules and everything. You're trying to do it through the gerrymandering. Now you want to change the rules once it's, you know, they're elected and they're simply, as you point out, Matt, implementing policies they ran on in the first place and won big. It's like, okay, yeah, this could really be a death knell, I believe, for the Republican Party. And I think they really ought to reconsider all this here and pull it off the table.
Sam, you agree?
I agree. But let them go at their own
peril.
Yeah. Well, that, yeah, life's filled with choices.
So Polis should has nothing to be worried about, in your opinion?
No. And even the other, there's two senators. One is Brittany Peterson, and I'm spacing out the other one. He might be a little bit more because he's in Colorado Springs. But
you're talking to Republican state senators.
State senators, yes. And their goal is to flip the Senate, is what it gets down, because if they pull the two seats, then they get control of the Senate for next year. So that's what they're, you know, going after there. But I think the people have just had enough of this and say, you know, rules are rules. This is how we play, you know. And even going back just very briefly on the impeachment thing, that, you know, failing that, that doesn't go. Trump is still president until January 2021. He's still the president. Okay, we're not having a recall on a presidential election or anything like this. It's just decisions made. You cope with it. You live with it for the next 2 to 4 years, whatever it is.
Yeah, I think it's bad politics. Bad timing, especially given the turn of this state so blue recently, and I don't think it's going to go anywhere. So I would tend to agree.
Yeah.
Which I find myself doing a lot with you, Jerry, and that makes me uncomfortable.
Well, I told you that about Polis when he first started running. You're going to say, well, you know, this is a, and I'm going to, like, it's not going to be an issue. His personal background and everything, too. So there you are.
Well, that's about it for another edition of The Middle Way, centrist political talk radio from KYGT Radio in Idaho Springs, Colorado. Thank you for listening. We again want to thank the Manila Pass Brewery, Delicious Local Eats, Dog-Friendly Restaurant, and Homemade Brews on Draft, 501 Rose Street in Georgetown, and the Historical Society of Idaho Springs, celebrating the history of the Idaho Springs area through operation of three museums and the Idaho Springs Visitor Center at 2060 Miner Street, right here in Idaho Springs. Thank you, Jerry, and thanks especially to our special guest from rural Colorado.
Sam, thanks.
Today,
thank
Sam.
Thank you, guys.
And
yeah,
we hope you can have you back again. In the meantime, until we're back, hopefully 2 weeks from today on July 27th, remember to keep rolling with the changes.